So I'd like to introduce our speakers today, our tag team, Michael and Chris. They run the International Business Accelerator. So they're going to talk about doing business outside of just California or the U.S. and doing business and what they look for in startups. One interesting thing that I thought was pretty interesting, I didn't realize, is they're actually doing a demo day with some of their startups today on blockchain. So that's pretty interesting. If you're into blockchain, you might want to talk to them afterwards. But I'd like to introduce Michael and Chris.
Thank you. Good morning. Great turnout today and really interesting group of people. What I like about Pasadena is that there is a sense of community and you just draw in all kinds of people who are interested in what's going on, but also what's in the community. So we are very excited to be here. Michael?
Yeah.
Turn yourself on. There you go.
Yeah. Thanks for having us. Thank you for having us. Chris is in Orange County, and I'm a Playa Vista, so it's always a treat to come out here. We are always we have a lot of respect for the community that you guys have here, supporting from within.
So okay.
Thanks for having us, Mike and Christy.
Yeah, definitely.
Andy Wilson was the one who put us in touch. Thanks to him and Mr. Microphone and Mr. Beck Discovery. Thanks everybody across campus as well.
Very good. Just tell just briefly about ourselves and about the International Business Accelerator. I'm Chris Lynch, and I founded the Business Accelerator about 3.5 years ago. My background is that I was a U.S. Foreign Service officer, an economist with the State Department, dealt with economic trade negotiations, business affairs, et cetera, in embassies and consulates and in D.C. Overseas, I was in Colombia, Chile, and El Salvador. And in the Europe, I was in Madrid, once in Germany, Bonn, when it was the old capital of West Germany. And then I had my last posting as the Consul General to Hamburg. So that's what always been my interest in international. At the end of Hamburg, my family suggested to me they'd had enough fun moving around the world. So we ended up, first of all, in the Bay Area, did a lot of consulting up there, ran a business incubator up in North Bay and in Santa Rosa. Came down here to Southern California. Started the economic development programs over in Irvine, working for the Irvine Chamber. I started an incubator there, and then came to start this accelerator, and we'll tell you a little bit more about that as we went forth. Michael?
Right, so Chris has the high-level diplomatic, he was the consul general to Northern Germany. I'm the complement of that. I'm a pure startup guy. I've been self-employed and own my own businesses for over 2 decades. And, I've lived abroad, worked abroad. In fact, I lived in Chile. I loved it so much I didn't want to come home, so I actually backpacked back to the U.S. Instead of taking a plane so I can get another year or so on the road. So I had sold my company or my share in my company a few years ago, and I wanted to do something on the export side, and I was looking around to try to accelerate that process, to take the cachet of an American brand, the trust and the confidence that consumers around the world have in an American company. And I couldn't find a program until I found Chris and his program that he had started. I think it was virtually at that. Actually, no, it was
Long Beach.
Yeah. Long Beach City College. So I said, hey, I'm working on a napkin idea. Maybe I'm not ready, but I love what you're doing, and I don't see anybody else out there doing it. And as a business owner, you're always looking for that opportunity where something's needed, but nothing's being offered. And when I found Chris doing it, I said, you know what? I can help you. I had started a co-working space as well, and I had the space. I had the membership of the Chamber of Commerce, of which it was affiliated. And I said, I got the space and I got membership and let's bring it up to LA. And all of a sudden today, as Mike said, we're going down to USC, with whom we're partnering, the business school, to do a blockchain accelerator demo day for the investors for our portfolio companies. So,
okay. Yes.
Are you open to Let's do
Q&A
afterwards, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we work both ways, inbound and outbound. But we'll get to that as we're talking about that. Yes, we are definitely looking for those cross-border.
So we do have a program where we help foreign companies come here and set up operations.
Yeah. And vice versa. The next one there. What I want to talk about today is why what we're passionate about, which is international business. And it's going to be a little bit of evangelizing, because I think it's an area that there's a lot of trepidation about in terms of business owners. And there's a lot of advice out there saying, oh, it's very complicated. Wait till you get everything fully developed before you go into markets. I'm going to give you sort of two reasons why you should be thinking about doing global business starting today. The first of which is that most of the prognostications for this coming 18 to 24 months is that there's going to be a global slowdown. Probably will be affecting the U.S. market, whether it'll be a slowdown or a recession. People are going to be scrambling for markets. If you have these additional markets, yes, it's going to be a lot of competition globally, but you're going to be playing in the entire global field at that point. The U.S. is, well, we'll get to this next slide, but just explain briefly. The U.S. is about a quarter of the world's GDP. and there's always this inward focus. So what it means is essentially we're always playing football inside our own 25. It's hard to do that. You're always on the defensive. Whereas if you change your mentality and look out, then that really enables you to have a global market and to balance risk as you're moving forward. The second thing is that we really believe that it's the earlier the better. We have worked, a classic example is we were talking with a firm here in the LA area that had created a product. It was in the coupon space, brought it to the UK, and we were talking with them about how they were their expansion operation. And I asked the question, what would you be doing different? Because the person who was the international operations manager had come on after the initial expansion, which was all inwardly focused. And he said they had to go back and they had to redo all of their website, their back end of their website. They had to do a whole series of, in terms of marketing, et cetera, et cetera. It was a costly thing for them to be doing that. And I'd argue, and more importantly, that if you think globally from the beginning, that you're going to do things differently. You're going to hire different people. You're going to market your products differently. You're going to create different kinds of products.
Yeah, as every accelerator has, we have a network of mentors and advisors, and corporate attorneys, IP attorneys, international attorneys are always a big, you know, critical component of that. And I remember one of the attorneys said, I don't know if I want to help you with the startups doing it right in the beginning, because I make way more money when they don't do it right in the beginning and they come to me on their knees because they have an invoice or a purchase order that they can't fill because the regulatory authorities in the other country won't let them do business. So,
okay. So let's get, this is just to bring that home. The U.S., about a quarter of the market. We have growth in the around the low twos. China has been running 7%. Japan and Germany are smaller ones. Germany will probably be doing it. But look at all these other countries down that you probably not even thought of. Ethiopia, Vietnam, Ivory Coast. And, you know, particularly for the African countries, they're the fastest growing region in the world right now. Why? Because of that thing called the mobile phone that's in your hand, that's in your pocket. They're able to now finally get into the money economy, to do microtransactions, to do all sorts of things. So that market is exploding for them as they move forward.
So these are the most developed countries right here. Imagine if our country had consistently 8% GDP growth year after year, you would be buying a lot more products and a lot more services. And that's what's happening in these companies, countries.
So the way I talk about all this is that we, I think of doing global business as playing 3D chess. And essentially, you have on here, the one side, your legal system, and the other one is your culture of doing business. You know how the board operates within the United States. You know how the pieces are moved. But suddenly then, with doing this internationally, you have a different set of those. You have to think more. You have to strategize more when you're able to move from level to level. You can do it. You just have to be prepared for it. So let's give our quick six tips for going forward. The first one is that you got to make sure that you're ready internally. One of the things we've added from our data, our blockchain experience, is really have what we're calling our data room. In other words, you have all your documents together, your incorporation, your bank accounts, your audits, and such and so forth. A lot of companies, surprisingly, just don't have that, and they're always searching around for it when an investor or a bank asks them for it. You got to review your online presence, you know, because what are you saying to the world? Is this current? Is this going to be something that's going to be well received in the other country? You know, there are all these cross-cultural dimensions that you have to think about. Review your systems. Are they going to be able to expand to international growth? Take care of accounting. Talk to your suppliers. Are they going to be able to do, for example, if you have to do have something with a CE mark to go into Europe or, say, a lot of African or Latin American countries, are you going to have that kind of standard instead of, yes, you have the UL standard, do you have the other one to go into those markets? And lastly out there, there's just all kinds of resources out there. Through large number of them are provided by the U.S. government to help people, to incentivize them to export. But basically, if you are smart about doing it, you can lay off 90% of your risk shipping internationally. What's that mean? It's safer to ship to Mongolia, Ulaanbaatar, or than to say to ship to Torrance. Okay, it's a much easier thing. So yes, there is risk. If you're smart, you know how to lay it off.
Just to make sure you heard that, you can lay off 95% of your risk if you're doing business internationally. Uncle Sam is going to shoulder that risk for you. Those kind of opportunities just don't exist for domestic business. Doing business domestically.
Yeah. As I mentioned, there's all kinds of cross-cultural dimensions. And that one is one with all kinds of unknowns. You have to understand how the consumers are reacting in the other market. You also have to understand how to negotiate. In our cohorts and in our in-person training, we actually have a whole section where you go through training people how to negotiate with people of different cultures because they have different expectations. They start at different points, you know, the high, low, a high bid, the low bid, whatever it is coming that. It's different, and I've seen so many of these blow up. One time I had a company I brought to Chile. This was after I had retired, and they had a potential of a $100 million kind of opportunity down there. And I said to them, go slow. They'd like to know you. They have to know who you are. They have to trust you before they'll do anything. And this guy came in like a typical American cowboy and said, oh, let's sign the bottom line today. Well, it blew up. And they lost a $100 million deal because they weren't being culturally sensitive.
I remember a business meeting in Chile when I was there and living there. An American guy asked the female CEO if she was hot and sexy and horny. But what he meant to ask is, are you hot? Can I take your jacket or should I turn the temperature down?
It's the words can get you in so much trouble.
Now, if you're really good, you can play that to your advantage, you know, and put everybody at ease at the beginning of a meeting. But, you know, it happens all the time. And a lot of times, as Chris was saying, it can cost you millions, like did that company in northern Chile.
Yeah.
Caliente is the word. Be careful.
Caliente instead of...
Calor is the
calor.
One you want.
Yeah, tiene calor.
In business, that is.
You have to then start looking at specific markets. You've sort of identified markets. Maybe that's where you're getting inquiries from. Maybe somebody said this is a hot market for you to go into. Maybe it's your trade association, whatever it is. So you have to look at things like tariffs and taxes, trade barriers. A lot of discussion about that in the popular press today. There's a lot of misinformation out there. So you got to start learning how to find that information, what it means. You have to review the standards and labeling requirements. These are different. You know, you have a food product, you're going to have to label it differently. You're going to have to maybe for the European Union certify it's GMO free. These are things that you just have to think of before you start doing the actual exporting. Logistics products, but you put all of this together, you come up with an idea of your price, and then you look at yourself compared to the other competitors in the market. And we spend a lot of time going into this in detail in our accelerator. But the real question is, where do you come in the market? Are you the low-cost person one, the value one that I call it? Are you the middle of the road? Are you the quality one, the high end? But you got to sell the reason that your product is there because of the quality features that you have. These may be completely different than what you are dealing with in the U.S. market. So it means adjusting your marketing strategy, adjusting your whole thought process so that you can talk to the customers, get from their point of view what is motivating them, how they are making these purchase decisions.
You know, when you're looking at the new markets, you could say, am I going to be the value? Am I going to be the luxury level? Another question might be, am I going to be the only player? You know, your bigger competitors are going to be in India and China, likely.
Yeah.
Are they going to be in Vietnam or, was it Ivory Coast or Myanmar? I mean, I think their GDP is probably in the 30s, 40s, or 50% at this point. Year over. Dubai, too, right.
Yeah.
Maybe you're the only one there. Your competitors aren't there, and that is a tremendous competitive advantage over and above, or you know, parallel to what kind of position you take in that market.
With all of these, there's all kinds of legal and HR issues, and this is the things that will get you in trouble, will cost you money, and it means you got to do your business. You do your homework beforehand. You have to have contracts that are working for international sales. They are not the ones that are going to be due for your domestic sales. You probably won't even have the same kind of attorney that you usually have to draw up your sales contracts. You're going to have something that's adapted for international ones, maybe even your specific markets. Intellectual property stops, the rights stop at the border. So you have to think about your patent strategy, your trademarks, even copyrights. Copyrights are less complicated, but they're still out there. How do you protect them? And this is one of the crux of the issues we're having right now with China, is getting them to respect our intellectual property rights. Tax strategies. You don't want both Uncle Sam and the other country dipping into your pockets. They will love to do it, but you have to figure out, not tax avoidance, but how you're going to make sure that your tax strategy goes there. And even small things, like if you're shipping into most countries, they have a value-added tax, okay? You are responsible for that one, okay? So if you sell somebody directly, an end customer, and you don't collect that value-added tax and give it back, those governments can come back and get you. So that may be 15% of your entire sale, or 18%. And suddenly there goes your profit margin. Why? Because you didn't make the effort ahead of time to figure out what the value-added tax and how to pay it. There are ways to do it, but you have to think about it. There's all kinds of legal and ethical tripwires. There's Federal Corrupt Practices Act, the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. There are prohibited persons. There are export controls. These are things that will get you in jail. People do go to jail for them all the time. And you have to be aware of them. And just saying that, oh, I didn't know, is not an excuse, okay? It's something you have to develop as part of your strategy. And then on the HR side, you have to build cross-cultural teams. You have to have people who understand the other customers from their point of view, who are adaptable. And here in Southern California, we're very lucky. We have a very diverse workforce here. And you can always find somebody here in this local market who is able to help you out. And then lastly, okay, you've gone through all of this. And you've thought through, because you're thinking through your three-dimensional chess. And then you then start looking at how do you do marketing and sales. They probably will be different than what you're doing here in the United States. You will have different kind of sales process, different kind of personal interactions. Marketing definitely will be different. How many of you have looked at it really closely at a Japanese website in Japanese? It's different. It's the colors are different. They're pastels. It's very cluttered by our definitions. There's lots of lights flashing at you and so forth. Okay? And then if you go over to China, it's brighter, bolder colors. It's a cleaner look. So you have to think about, if I'm going to be selling to the other country, how is it that they want to be approached?
And on their websites, you'll notice that there's always a mission. The values of the company are always there, almost in every culture, except ours. So
yeah, the social responsible, corporate social responsibility. Right. Most other countries, people are interested in that. That's just
critical
something to have
post
there.
It.
And then you have to do your operations. Can you, if you get a customer in India and they're 12 hours off from us, and you have a problem, and they call your helpline, is there going to be somebody there at 2 in the morning to answer their questions? If not, you may lose sales. You may lose permanent sales. So it's thinking about customer satisfaction, just as you do here in the U.S. market. Okay. And the final financial strategy, Michael and mentioned, and I also mentioned that there's all these, there's a lot of incentives out there in terms of trade finance. You have to think of foreign exchange. That could change at any one particular time. Foreign exchange, by the way, is not driven by trade deficits. It's driven by exchange rate differentials. I mean, interest rate differentials. So the Fed changing the interest rate is more likely to affect your foreign exchange rate than a trade deficit, okay? But you have to be, you can't prevent those, but you gotta factor them into your thinking. And then lastly, we work quite a bit with our partner, with our companies to get them to think about their growth strategy. We are a fee-for-service. We don't provide equity funding in our accelerator. I would argue that unless you have a very specific one that fits well with a venture capital fund, you're probably better off at the beginning because you're not locked into any one particular strategy. But we do have association with a number of investors, VC companies, crowdsourced equity funding, so forth. So we have to go global there. And, okay, I've thrown a lot of things at you. This is a checklist, okay? Get you thinking. We'll be glad to, if you have questions on that, you can send us a quick link right there. Quick question. We'll be glad to do that. If you need referrals to specific people, also glad to do that. We view this as part of our nonprofit orientation, that we are out here for service to the community, developing jobs and company growth here in Southern California. Now, there's one thing that we would, by the way, too, if you need a specific country market report, we have a series of people that work with us, including a lot of college interns, that we actually do country reports on a detailed basis. They're about $500, $495, but they are a good way for you in case you want to get a good market summary going ahead.
Yeah. So we customize them to what your objectives are?
Yeah.
For the market intelligence, market entry reports?
And then lastly, just a quick thing here. We're taking a lot of our strategy that we've been doing these online, in-person cohorts. We're testing out an online strategy. We are looking for people to be beta testers with us. I'm going to basically give you half off the rate, but basically it includes 5 hours of in-depth presentations, 6 hours of consulting. You'll end up with a really top-notch export plan and strategy, and so we're just basically giving off that. If you're interested, let us know. we have to test out our own thing to see what we're doing, if it makes sense. So that's another reason to appreciate your strategy there. So
this is not a sales thing, please.
Yes.
Don't get us wrong. We're not pushing this. We are building it. We are still recording the videos, working on the curriculum. So we're asking you if you're interested in helping us with the feedback, and for in exchange, you get the personalized one-on-one coaching and everything that comes with the program for half off. So we'd appreciate your help on that.
And that's it. We're going to do for Q&A now.
Thank you for that presentation. Very informative. I'm going to hand the microphone to John. We'll do a Q&A. If you've got a question, we'd love to hear it. If you've got a comment about how you got taxed because you try to do business internationally, let's not talk about that now. So, John, here you go.
Okay. I'll get to the back.
Thank you. This was great. I was wondering if you could speak to a couple of the companies you've worked with and maybe not go through all the steps, but it'd be really cool to hear some examples.
Sure. We had, first of all, we see three different kind of companies come into our program and we select them as such. We have the napkin idea that needs to be a global entity from the get-go, and the headquarters are simply here in the U.S. and the operations will be in another country. We have companies that are on a momentum trajectory. They're doing well and they just need to expand and they need new customers, new markets, and we help them go abroad. And then the third are the companies that are doing so well. They're already exporting, but they perhaps didn't do it correctly in the nascent steps of building their company or their global strategy, or they've just gotten in trouble. So we had a company who was shipping to 60 to 70 different countries. He was doing it from his garage. He and his wife were running the business as a part-time. 60, 70 different countries, he was shipping a product that was made of leather, and he was shipping everything through the United States Postal Service. And he came to us because he didn't have a supply chain or logistics set up. And I think the tipping point for him was he had sent a shipment to Scandinavia and just either forgot or didn't know that he had to add the VAT tax in. So he sent this very large shipment of very luxury products to Scandinavia, and it sat in the warehouse while the customer said, oh no, I'm not paying 30 more percent on that. And it sat there, and he said, well, just how do you figure it out? And he lost a lot of money and a lot of time. He had to bring the goods back. So that was one on the more advanced side.
And, you know, just one of the companies that's going to be presenting today at our demo day is one that is using blockchain technology for opioid control. And they're basically tracking the pills and so forth. Really interesting combination of software and hardware with this one. But they were just selected by the FDA to be one of their eight partners in the, what they're going forward, industrial partners, to really develop solutions for opioid control.
Big pharma is a global issue, and the consumption of the pills is a global issue. So he had so much momentum here. He said, while I'm doing all this in the frenetic way in which I do it, I might as well add another 10% just to go into the UK or Australia or some other countries. Is that a good representation of?
Thanks for talking. It's been great hearing. I'm kind of curious, you talked on risk a little bit, that, you know, diversify your risk. But for me, it feels still uncertain. So I was wondering if you could go a little bit deeper into the benefits and maybe success stories of, you know, you're taking on so much risk, you're going into another person's territory where you have no idea about all of these. Could you talk more a little bit about how it's actually worth it?
Sure. First thing I'd like to do is introduce you to Kelly. She helps you get out of cocoons. So if you feel risk, you talk to Kelly here.
Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, the risk part of it is, it's first of all preparing your market, knowing what you're going to be getting into so that you don't fall into any of these sort of pitfalls right there. It then also is tying on the resources. For example, you want to go into a particular country and you need to find out distributors for your products there. Do you know that the U.S. Department of Commerce, you can also work through the Small Business Administration, can actually help you go and identify somebody at the U.S. Embassy over there. I used to supervise those people. And they will, they really know the markets. You know, when I was in Germany, there was a guy who knew everything about the German IT market. You know, there's this huge IT fair they have over there called CeBIT. You know, he ran that thing. He knew everybody right there. Okay? And then, so that helps you understand in terms of the market what your, you can minimize risk, or you can help identify partners and things like that. And then you get into issues like foreign exchange and payments. You can buy insurance products that will lay off a lot of the risk. You can, in short term, some of the foreign exchange things, you can do some hedging or things to minimize all of that. So the studies have shown that companies that export are more profitable than the ones that don't. They have a higher growth trajectory than the ones that don't. It's like 20%, 30% more. And more importantly, they're more innovative than the companies that are just focused on the U.S. market. That's the bottom line why you should do it.
Over here, Chris.
So two questions about GDP and also economic growth percent. How you understand, for example, if country is corrupted and the entire money are going to some people, or it is not corrupted, but there are strong families, business families who are taking entire market. So how to enter to these markets, or should we? And the second question, how you understand who is the decision maker or decision makers in industry when you are going somewhere? Because there are lots of people who are just keeping industry warm, and you are just you can't understand with whom to deal to do real businesses.
Well, there's a lot of things here, but you need somebody to interpret the local country for you who knows it from the inside. Okay, and that may be somebody through the U.S. Embassy. It may be somebody you find through a trade association, through a contact, and so forth. But those things are important to know. Who's running the, you know, who's making the decisions in that particular country? How do you deal with the issues of corruption? Because, yes, there is that Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. You can do small facilitation payments, but you may be asked for the big bribe, you know? And so taking the big bribe or offering it will get you in jail. So it's understanding, but you have to have somebody to translate that to you, and you have to have a good understanding of yourself and your company and your objectives and what you can do before you make those kinds of decisions, okay? Probably not the best answer, but it's country by country. You got to know what's going on there.
So you already have the International Business Accelerator. How did you decide that you wanted to do one specifically on blockchain, and what are you learning through that process, and how are you finding it's different? You know, just what compelled you?
Our accelerator has always been sector agnostic, and the tech side has always been as interesting as the product side. As a business owner myself, you're always looking to be ahead of the curve somewhat or stay more than relevant. So our plan was always to do blockchain, AI, and fintech because America is a global leader in the talent that we have behind these technologies, and our brand and our companies and our services and our solutions always have a confidence behind them when viewed from outside the U.S. So I think it's just a logical progression of what we're doing. Blockchain, in particular, is a decentralized entity. Nobody owns it. There are no borders. There are no governments. I mean, they're trying to, but you know, there's no one really regulating it. So by definition, it is global. It is borderless. Same thing with a lot of the high advanced tech. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, I guess why start something specific to blockchain though?
Well, we put together the curriculum to help startups and early rev and high growth companies to get into cross-border growth, international expansion, and being sector agnostic was fun, but we can plug and play the curriculum with the tech, you know, the specific tech sector. So,
and we also found came across somebody who was a really good blockchain expert who could work with us. Okay, so I'm not going to try and do something in fintech or something on that my own, but the overall things we know, but yes, we need, you know, we bring in expertise as we bring with the lawyers and the accountants and so forth.
So when I said plug and play, we have an expert on blockchain. She has her expertise and her network from the tech side. So, and then we'll do the same with AI.
Yeah, I love that story about the guy who sent some high-end goods to, where was it, Sweden or Finland, and then had to bring them back.
Yeah.
Terrible news.
Yeah, and he was sending leather into Italy, and Italy is a fashion country. They're very protective of their leather, right? Yeah.
So can you give us a couple of examples of people who've used your services and then, you know, got ridiculously wealthy or successful?
not ridiculously wealthy, but we have had some, you know, for example, there was one very traditional products manufacturer. It's these interlocking rubberized floor tiles that you can buy at Lowe's. And they wanted to go into the Mexican market. So what we did for them was work with them to develop the strategy through the U.S. Commercial Service. We found partners and distributors for them, and also working through the state of California, they have some grants. And so we got $3,000 for them to go to a trade show down there. So they did that. They've been expanding their markets and so forth. You know, not fabulously wealthy, but, you know, definitely things that they're expanding right there.
So when you put together a demo deck, a pitch deck for demo day in our program, typically the companies come in with their projections of, you know, total accessible market here and there. And as Chris mentioned earlier, our global purchasing power here domestically is about 22 to 26% of the world's. Which is great. It'll put money, you know, put food on your table, but 75% of your potential customers are abroad. So you come in and you redo your deck, and all of a sudden your projections are almost 300% more. You know, we had those numbers up there. Europe has 741 million people. We have 325. You can sell the same to Europe and do half as well there, and still have more customers than you will here domestically. And we prepare the companies well, we think. Anecdotally, today we have a company on demo day. She just got into Quake Capital, so she gets $200,000 check right away. Fabulously wealthy, no, but it's a good start because I don't think she has more than one employee.
Yeah, right. And just to add on top of that, we did, as part of our nonprofit mission, trying to have a very diverse outreach, and we've actually had 60% of our companies have women founders, and almost half of them have minority owned businesses. So we try and get, you know, a diverse group right there. So,
What about service based businesses instead of products?
Yeah, no, we do. We work with them. For example, we've worked with a number of service based businesses. One of which, for example, was in the courier services. The courier companies actually do a lot of 1099ers, drivers that they pick up every single day to do delivery. It's more and more common right now. There isn't a good market for that, so this company came up with something. I call it like an Uber-like app, but he always slaps me every time I say that. He said, we're not Uber, but they, you know, we worked with them. They wanted to move into Canada. Now, what they discovered at the end of their class, at the course, was that in terms of expanding, we're not there yet. But what they did decide was, okay, we're going to make the following kinds of things in terms of our website architecture, in terms of our marketing and so forth, to allow for the international expansion when we're going. And we've mapped out what we have to do when we're doing that. That'll probably be next year. They're really doing well right now. They just got another round of funding of a couple $100,000. So they're going to be actually close to 600,000. So they're going to be, that's the kind of things. We work very well with service companies in addition to product companies.
There was a company who created a platform for, home renovation?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of frustration between the contractors and the homeowners. So she wanted to bridge that gap. So she put in an escrow play. She put in a project management play. And so it essentially was a platform to do the whole home improvement. And nobody could move forward unless both parties were happy and they signed off on it. So she, I guess, realized that the British are so nice and so polite, but the frustration and the sort of vitriol came out when the contractor left because they didn't want to yell at him because it was impolite. So she went into the UK to say, here's a technical service to make sure that everybody's on the same page. If you're too nice to each other, to your face, at least everybody's moving along at the same pace and satisfied with the work being done. So, I mean, we see that as a service.
There's a question over here, and I'll go ahead and try to ask it for this gentleman with regards to Myanmar. There are some countries where the U.S. has trade embargoes, I think Iran, North Korea, Cuba, et cetera. His question is regarding Myanmar. Is there any restrictions as far as that particular country is concerned because of the military control? And second, if there isn't, are you able to provide a country report for that, for this gentleman, for his specific marketing?
I'll turn that over to the diplomat.
I have to review it as of this week. I don't know. There are a number of the restrictions were lifted, but it's been in play because of the human rights situation there. Still, it's very controversial. So I don't know the answer as of right now. I know that a number of them were lifted a while ago, but this is the kind of example there. Yes, if there are... that's one of the first things we do in terms of our due diligence, in terms of our reports. Yeah, I know they do, and I know that there are people here who are doing business with Myanmar. So, yeah, and so yeah, we actually in our reports we go through and do the costing and things like that.
And your question was, is there a process?
Other than writing an agreement to a citizen over there, okay, who have contact with the government, there's really no control.
You know, we would have to look at this particular one. You know, the thing with Myanmar also, too, is I believe there are a number of people on this, what they call this prohibited persons list. So the matter there is, even though you can do business with the country, there are many people who you can't do business with. I mean, there's a lot now in Russia because of the Russia sanctions, okay? And it also has ITAR restrictions, which are the... those are the dual-use export controls. And, yeah, that's they're more, you know, it comes in various tranches there, but it's one of the countries that's more difficult if you're doing an advanced technology export.
All right, next week we've got a really great presentation. Entrepreneurs, startups, pitching is such a big part of the business. And our presentation next week is Allison McGuire. She's going to teach us how to pitch like a boss. I met Allison a couple of years ago. She had a startup called Walk. It was actually really interesting. I met her. She came out to California as she was doing her pitch presentations. And she actually won every pitch competition she was part of, BMW's pitch competition, McDonald's. And so she's going to walk through the steps she took to create these presentations and actually give an amazing pitch. So Allison is going to be a very amazing presenter. I'm really looking forward to her.